I do this for my culture, 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 culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture right here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me this evening. Folks, we're having a different conversation. This is a sister that I've been trying to get on to the show, and now we are able to make it happen. She has a very, very compelling story as we're going to talk to her about how she came from the streets of Detroit to the hills of Hollywood. And tonight we're going to be checking in with the first lady of the Black Mafia family, Miss Tonisa Welch. Good evening, Tonisa. How you feeling?
I'm feeling well. How are you, Faraji? Hello, Baltimore. Yeah. Thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. Let's talk about you and your story, because I say it's compelling. I think it's interesting, but some people may not know. First and foremost, there is people know about Black Mafia family, right? BMF.
Right.
And so people know about that. There were songs that's about it. Hip hop artists that often speak about it. You know, from Young Jeezy to Drake to Rick Ross and everybody else have often spoke about it. And when we look at it, this was a major drug organization that started in Southwest Detroit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so talk to us a little bit about this, because I think some people might have BMF is almost like a myth. It's like, is this real? Is this, can two black boys who grew to become black men, you know, run an empire, a drug empire that was worth over hundreds of millions of dollars? Is this real? You grew up in Southwest Detroit. You knew Big Meech, Demetrius Flannery. You knew Southwest T, Terry Flannery, the brothers. Talk to us about your experience in from Detroit.
Okay, I'm from Detroit, but I'm from the West Side.
West Side,
Detroit. Yeah.
Okay.
And Terry and Demetrius Flannery, they're from Southwest Detroit.
Yes.
And being, I also was in a gang, you know. So, you know, people that know that are in the gang, they kind of meet each other, you know, to keep, just to keep product going, just, you know, to be, you know, it's like a clique with anything else. And so that's how I came about meeting them. But that was around, I could say, years ago. I met them like in 88. It's mm-hmm. been like 31 years. Mm. Ooh, I'm telling my age. It's been a long time. So we all have been around a long time. And it's really real. I mean, you know, being in it, you know, I've been dating Terry for a long time. And guys, don't judge me. Yes, I've been a long time girlfriend. I don't know what this is. Maybe if we get married, it'll curse it. But you know, we've been together for a long time. He was incarcerated. He just came home in May under the
because of the pandemic.
Yes, the Passion Release Act. I came home like in 2012, so I have been home a while. So I've been hitting the ground, a long time trying to rebuild myself. But we all was incarcerated. Our indictment was in 2005. And it was about 157 people that were indicted.
Mm.
Why I think they call me the first lady, because I was around when when it first started, the involvement, you know, from the ground floor up. And I guess me being in it didn't realize the magnitude. I knew we were growing and we were big, but life happened so fast. Things were moving so fast. It was like a whirlwind. You know what I mean? It was like, wow, you here. Like they say, you started here, and now you here. It started from the bottom, now you here. It was like quick to me in my eyes. It went really fast. But when you sitting in a courtroom and they telling you how long it's been, you're like, wow, I've been in this a long time, you know? So going to prison, I realized that we've been doing this thing a long time, you know. Regretting it then, but I don't regret it anymore. I'm done with that. You know, I've asked the they've been given from life, from my family, from God, from the people that I hurt, you know. So, but yeah, we've been around a long time, and it just wasn't in Detroit. It was, you know, like they said, nationwide. It was across the United States in different, you know, different states, you know.
Yeah, I saw Tanisa, I saw one interview of you, and okay. Generally I don't do this. So, you know, I don't, you know, if somebody's been on an interview and I, you know, we able to have to talk to that same person on the show, I don't go back to the past and interview. But I thought this was interesting. They were talking about how much money that you probably have gone through because you were a part of that operation.
Right.
And I think people have always been like, there's this great fascination because of the money when it comes to, you know, drugs and all of that. How much money did you see throughout this whole process?
I can't account for it, but what the prosecutor said was over like $300 million.
$300 million.
Yeah, sadly to say, yep.
Over $300 million that have come through this whole organization.
This organization's hand, yeah.
Wow. Yep. And you were how old when you
when I first got in the game before I even met T and Misha, I was like 19 years old. I got in early. I was so fascinated by it. I went to one of the, you know, in Detroit, I always say back then it was either you or with, you know, a pimp player, you know, drug dealers. Our city was unfortunately filled with that kind of lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up around, you know, older girls, I was just fascinated about in their life, you know. And that's what I fell into, you know, because I was surrounded about that, around that. We went to a party one time and it just kind of, that fascination just, I wanted to be in it. I wanted to do that. I wanted to be a part of that. You know, that's why when you say glamorizing and it, and what, you know, with a young, what impresses a young person, you know, it's unfortunate that the unfortunate thing that impressed me, and that's how I fell in it, you know?
So I'm always curious as for girls and young women who get into that lifestyle. I mean, one is it something you're saying that the attraction was just the lifestyle, the money, the mm-hmm. the showmanship of that. But was it anything deeper? Because I know that young women listening to the show, they might be like, is that it? Or was there a void to fill that you felt that needed to be filled in order for you to be a complete person? Was there something on that level?
At that time, I didn't realize it, but as I got older and, you know, going through therapy, going through self-help, helping other women, I feel like it was something, a void missing in me when I was younger, you know, wanting to be accepted, thinking that money and things was power that made me feel power and made people accept me, you know. So that's kind of how I felt. And the more I had, the better I looked, you know, the fancier jewels and cars I had. You know, people gravitated to me more. I felt like I was, you know, empowered. You have this kind of control, and that's how I felt. Like you felt people were just falling to doing whatever you wanted. That, you know, and you fall into that. You fall into that. What it was that false identity. You know what I mean? Like you thinking that this is really you. The greed and the money and the power takes over. You know, and it's just a false identity, you know. But like I say, I fell in young, and there was nobody to tell me, hey, you know, help me out and pull me out of it. You know, I grew up in a community where it was accepted.
It was accepted, and that was part of the culture.
It was part of the culture back then.
It was part of the culture.
Detroit. Yeah.
And so, you know, when we're looking at how that culture continues to happen. I mean, you're talking about this, you said, back in the late 80s, and I'm familiar with mm-hmm. it because I was around, and mm-hmm. we know that drugs were hitting the black, you know, drugs hit the black community super hard
right.
in places like Baltimore, D.C., Detroit,
right.
and other places
mm-hmm.
around. Did it occur to you that if I get myself involved, I might be going down a road that I can't turn back on.
No, I didn't even have that fear. I didn't even think about it. And like I said, fortunately, it's a lot of people like me. You know, I didn't even fear until, you know, later on. Like, I've been in that life so long, it was a part of my life.
Mm.
You know, I didn't know anything other than that life. You know, I just thought that I could do it. It was so easy for me. It was so comfortable for me, you know. And then sadly to say, you know, that how I fell in and didn't even realize that I'm not only dragging myself in, I'm dragging other people in because they wanted my life. They, you know, this is what I was showing them. Also, you know, even my sons, I have three sons, and one of my sons ended up being incarcerated on my indictment. You know, him, my family, I took my whole family in. And that was the saddest thing in life for me. But what happens is if a parent is involved in that or a parent go to prison, 70% of the time, one of your children follows you.
Mm.
And that was a sad, sad reality for me, you know, after everything, after the fall. You know, how they say the book, The Rise and Fall, when that fall hit, when we fell, you fell hard, hard. And so that was the reality of it. So I have to tell people a lot. It's not about yourself. You know, you got to think about everybody around you. You got to think about your community. You got to think about your family. You got to think about everybody. It's just not about you. And we don't need things to make us feel to be accepted. You know, that's just false. You know, you can be empowered just yourself. You know, you don't need things. You don't need, and it's sad, like, in the black communities, we think the more designer, the more things we have, it creates a false self-identity that it's more accepted, that we're better, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Folks, if you are just tuning in, we're talking to the first lady of the Black Mafia family. She's a notorious queen. She's the star of the Notorious Queen on All Black Network, and she has changed her life around after coming home. She's changing her life around. She started a nonprofit organization called Silent Heart. She's teaching children of incarcerated parents how to get through those tough moments. And she has getting back to community organizing, community development, and youth development. We want to open up the phone lines at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Coley. Hold it. We got Coley online.
What's going on?
Hey, Coley, how you doing, brother?
Hey, surprise. This is a surprise topic or a person that you have on your platform. But nevertheless, I have a question. You know what I mean? I don't know if, you know what I mean, far left, but I want to ask to our acknowledgement that did Blue cooperate?
Did what?
Did Blue cooperate?
You know, I don't like to speak on people. Like, I mean, that I only worry about what happened to me. If he did cooperate, you know, I have to take responsibility. I was in that life to give people the shit to cooperate on me about. So I don't know. I don't know his life. I don't know anything really about him. So I can't speak on that.
Okay. All right, cool.
All right, Coley, thank you so much for checking in, 410-319-8888. Now, you went through this. So when you did your 56 months in prison, you were sentenced to 56 months, and you served nearly 3 years.
Right.
But you never did prison time before that moment. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So this, I mean, you went through the gang life. You did all this other stuff. And then you get into this part of your life, and you're just like, whoa, money is coming. I mean, you know, here you got Southwest T. He is just romancing and seducing you with trips and all of these things. You are participating in a lot of illegal activity, laundering money, and then boom, the hammer falls down. The hammer of the United States government falls down. Even when you were in prison, Did it hit you that this right here could I'm really might be going downward, like this could, when did it hit you, like, seriously, that, you know what,
it hit it hit me actually the day that the day they raided my home, and I knew that like I said, I was one of the first women that was indicted. And so the day that they raided my home, no, you know what? Let me back up. When they actually arrested T, and they didn't give him a bond, I felt it. And I kept thinking, like, you keep hoping and praying, but I felt it. Like, you know, I'm a big part of this. There's no way I'm going to miss this. And I was just preparing myself mentally in my own mind, not telling my family, not saying anything, that I knew it was coming. And so when they actually raided my home that day, and I was in handcuffs, and I'm looking at my mom and my younger son, I felt like, damn, this is over. It's finally fell in that hole.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. So let me ask you, because you know it, and I know this, Tanisa, that there is this just, I mean, this happened in the 80s and 90s, but there's still, I mean, now when you talk about BMF, it's a whole new thing. The fascination, I think the fascination, the appeal of what this organization did and the impact that it has made is absolutely tremendous. And as we started off with earlier, I mean, rappers have talked about it. You have, I mean, there are, you know, 50 Cent is doing a movie on it. How do you make sure that you keep this conversation about this part of your personal history and just about this culture in perspective, so that way we don't get into an even greater glamorization of it? And especially now, considering social media, considering, you know, imagery, considering the great influence that hip-hop has had, how do we make sure that the next generation don't produce another Tonisa Welch from who was 19 years old, or another Big Meech, or another Southwest T in that respect? How do we do that?
What we do is, like, you know, we're responsible for, you know, our youth, our family, our children that are coming up under us. And you just have to really talk about it. Talk about, you know, what was going on. Talk about how, you know, where your mind was at, and educate them that where are they going? It's not, you're only going so far. Like, I always tell people, I was blessed because I was in prison with women that hadn't even seen my life, hadn't even touched my life. My roommate was doing like 20 years, and here I am. She had told me she had never left her neighborhood. Mm. Like, how did this happen to you? And here I am, you know, I've, like you said, spent millions of dollars and been all over the world. So I was really blessed, and I know that came from God. That wasn't nothing but God. So I tell people all the time, this could happen to you. And once you're there, it's hard for a lot of people to get out, you know, and everybody is not going to be sentenced the same. And I tell people it's no ending road for you. Either, you know, me and T, you saw Terry, Southwest T, we used to always talk about it. You know, there's no way out of this. It's either jail or hell, you know. And that was a sad reality for us, but we talked about it all the time because we had got to a certain level where you didn't even know how to pull back. Mm. You didn't even know how to pull back. And that was sad because it was many nights, many times that we talked about it. And now that's what we do. We tell where he's at now, he tell these young people. And I tell these young people, you don't want to go there. All this looks nice. It looks good, but it's not worth losing your life over, losing your family over. It's nothing worth it. It's a false reality, and you can get where we're at. If you apply yourself to something else, there's so many different hustles. There's so many different talented people. We are really talented people, and we can teach our kids how to set their goals and push their dreams other than being in the streets, you know?
Yeah.
We try to transform the way people think now. We want to build stronger families and better communities. We don't want to teach people that the way we were living was good. You know, it took me years to even, like, this show or doing my book or talking about it, you know, because it had to go through that regret and shame, because who wants to talk about tearing down their community? You know, who wants to say that I'm a part of this? I'm a part of children mothers being incarcerated because they became drug addicted. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of that we have to talk about. We have to put back the shame, put back the regret, and educate people, educate our younger adults and younger kids that this ain't nothing, bro. This is nothing. This is not even Gucci. It's nothing. You know, I'm not trying to talk about people that's in that life. It's just not for me and my family. You know what I mean?
And it's funny, Tonisa, because I was literally going to ask you, you know, when, you know, how do you handle coming across families that may have been impacted by the drugs that you sold, and may have been impacted by the organization, and you know, in a negative way, because we don't talk about that enough. That at the end of the day, the families are destroyed because of that.
Right. I never came across, I guess, people, and that's what I said. You know, you get so high up, you don't even touch that anymore, the people down. And that's sad to say. But when I come across people and kids that need help, I do. I mean, that's what it's all about for me. That's my therapy. That's me giving back. You know, I want to help somebody. I always go out and help people from, you know, homelessness starts from either mental illness or drugs, you know. So I'm always out in my communities. I'm always known for that. People are always calling me. I started my organization, and it was just a small organization, and it was me and my son. And we were set to do this. We were set to give back because I left them and other people were leaving their children. But I have been pulled in so many different directions because I'm so dedicated. I've been under a lot of umbrellas of bigger organizations, like I said, from Kids Up, Incarcerated Parents, homelessness, prison reform. Whatever I can help in, that's my way of serving back my community. I can't keep, you know, like I said, I can't keep in that regret up. The only thing I can do is keep moving forward and giving myself, being selfless, and giving myself back to my community. And that's what I've been changing. I had to recreate myself, like starting this show, you know, doing other things, talking about my life, and just for all my other projects. I have a book coming out, you know, at the end of the year. So it's just like talking about and educating people that this is nowhere you want to go. You can only get so big in this life, you know. I don't see how, if it never touched you, prison never touched you, I don't see how it happened. But, hey, with us, it happened, and we went, and I don't want to go back. That's not where I ever, ever want to go back to, you know. It's no place to be. It's just takes your soul away. It just takes your dignity, and, you know. So, no, you don't want that. You want to grow up, and your parents look at you to be proud. They want to be proud of their kids. And that's what I want, you know, us to. We're responsible, like you, Faraji, me, and everybody else. We are responsible for our young kids today, and we need to empower them to be greater, to be better.
Well, you know what, Tonisa? I am thankful that you are, you know, you came on to share your story. But I'm even more thankful that, you know, you've been blessed to kind of turn over a new leaf. I know that the work of Silent Heart is a work that is, you founded it back in 2012. You help families who have been impacted by incarceration. You work with the children. Folks, you want to check them out at silentheart.org. That's SYLENTHEART.org, silentheart.org. And the founder is Tonisa Welch. She changed her life around. She came to her senses about a lot of things, and now she's out in the community to make people better. Tonisa, thank you so much for taking time out your busy schedule to be with us to talk about your story a little bit. We got to have you back on once your book hits the shelves.
Yeah, make sure that everybody tune in. Another thing is about Notorious Queens, about these women, four women who were with these infamous men that are coming out on their own, creating businesses and doing great things and building a sisterhood. So y'all check us out. It's all on the All Black Network. You can get it through Prime Video, or check me out on Miss Tonisa Love on my IG. It's MSTONESA Love, Miss Tonisa Love. And thank you for having me. In Baltimore, y'all stay safe.
Absolutely. Tonisa Welch, check in and follow her on all social media platforms, and definitely check her out on Notorious Queens on the All Black Network. Folks, we got to take a final pause. When we come back, more conversation. Stay riding with us. It's For the Culture on WEAA.
I do this for my culture, 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 culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture right here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me this evening, folks. Man, having a great show. The last part of this conversation that I think that we should have is something that I saw. Something that I saw that I thought about. You want to talk about me and Demi? We always go back and forth about certain things. All right, so here's the thing. All right, she wants to talk about this. You want to talk about this? So look, here's the thing, folks. Remember the other night? I didn't get a chance to get to it because we were kind of enraptured in another conversation. But the other night, there was a story about a pastor in Washington, D.C. His name is, I don't even know, can we call him a pastor at this point? His name is Rudolph Brooks. He's 45 years old. He's out of Cheltenham, Maryland. He was recently charged with wire fraud. And the thing about him was is that he's a pastor. He's a pastor. He's the founder and pastor of Kingdom Tabernacle of Restoration Ministries in Northeast Washington, D.C. And according to this complaint, he also identified himself as the owner of Cars Direct by Garvin HWD Bob's Motors in Cheltenham. Now, apparently, he was arrested in Northeast Washington and charged with fraudulently obtaining more than $1.5 million from the coronavirus-related Paycheck Protection Program. They allege that he bought 39 used luxury automobiles and he bought some property in Baltimore City. So I wanted to talk about this because one of the big conversations that I think we should have is, should churches and faith institutions have, should be qualified to get any type of assistance from COVID-19 relief? Now, they're already talking about like a fourth stimulus check, and they're talking about some additional additional economic relief. But I'm asking, should they? Now, technically, legally, yes. Churches are allowed to receive what they call the PPP loan. They are allowed to receive that. However, I'm just saying, and I'm just asking, in light of what this pastor has done, and there have been other cases of fraud and misappropriation of funds, that does this situation set up an issue where a faith institution getting government money for a global health crisis can possibly open the door for some unsavory behavior? So I want to get your take on this. 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. According to the reports about this pastor, Rudolph Brooks Jr., the authorities said that on last year, May 9th, he applied for a $1.5 million PPP loan on behalf of his car dealership, Cars Direct, and allegedly submitted fraudulent business tax returns supporting his application. The thing was, his application was approved. And so authorities allege he transferred the funds to his personal bank account and bought these 39 used vehicles. He bought a 2017 Mercedes-Benz S-Class, two 2017 Infiniti Q50s, a 2015 Cadillac Escalade, a 2005 Bentley Continental, and a 2018 Tesla Model 3. Then in August of last year, federal authorities said that he initiated two wire transfers of more than $145,000 to a title company regarding a property purchase here in Baltimore. Then he tried to apply for two additional PPP loans. Again, PPP standing for Paycheck Protection Program loans. The authorities were able to seize more than $2.2 million from 11 bank. I don't even know how this guy kept track of 11 bank accounts. I have a few. But 11 bank accounts. If convicted, he's facing a maximum of 20 years in prison, according to the prosecutor. On the church's, now here's the crazy part, and this is by no means a shade on the church. This is not a shade on the church. What I'm asking, though, is how do we stop the activity in the name of God? On the church's now deleted Facebook page was the motto. Here's, y'all ready for this? The motto was, "We're feeding and clothing the homeless and needy." We're feeding and clothing the homeless and needy. Should faith institutions get any sort of economic boost during this pandemic? Should they be eligible for PPP loans? Let's go to the phone lines. Let's hear what folks got to say. Donna, thank you so much for checking in. What's your take? We got Donna on the line?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Well, in piggyback off your last guest and this scenario with this pastor, one of the problems we have in our community is what we saw in Trump, the narcissism personality disorder. We have it widespread in our community as well because we look at money and wealth and prosperity as within but those who commit these type of embezzlements and stuff mind. And you see it in the churches. You see it, in the what your last guest has talked about. It's that level of greed and materialism that people get sucked into, and
right,
our people especially, because you saw what happened to Sheila Dixon. You saw what happened in Catherine Pugh. Several delegates in Prince George's County went through it, and they're all in jail. So when it comes to money, one of the things that the federal government always gets us is exactly what this pastor just did. We get it even in the political arena, or we get it into the clergy. And when you set this type of money, all eyes are on you, and they monitor how you spend it. Do you share with the economy? Do you spend it for what you wrote the loan for, the grant for, whatever? I know, and I've heard horror stories of churches buying land in Baltimore. We'll be fixing it up for a community center for the seniors. And the land is sitting there 20 years later, vacant. The money that they got from the state, from the federal government, went in everybody's pocket, and the land is still sitting there, house on vacant, boarded up, never did anything to it. And I saw several of that in several communities of ours. And it's so prolific. And I told some of the people who went to these churches, why didn't you turn your pastor in? Oh, I could never do that. Well, they just embezzled money that came from the federal government and the state. They were supposed to be building the senior center with this abandoned building, and nothing ever happened. So you had all these buildings. I'm not going to tell you the neighborhood. You had all these buildings where these churches bought, got the federal and state funds to make senior citizen place, and it's still abandoned, boarded up, 20 years later. So how the government gets us, they use our greed, our materialism, and because of the personality issue we have when it comes to narcissist personality issues. And when we get a hold of it, we run with it. And we don't realize that they're watching every penny we spend so they can get us in jail. And you can see in the political arena and in the religious arena how it's happening. So churches have to be real careful. And I don't think they're looking at, I don't think they are careful. And I think this is going to be open up a Pandora's box for our clergy that does this, because you're going to find now about black political people, they're going to be sharing the cell with the black political leaders are in
wow.
the same thing.
Wow, Donna. The pastor sharing the cell with the politician.
Right?
Wow.
That's what you're going to start seeing. That's why I told my friends who have who see this happening in their church. I said, don't be surprised. The clergy are going to be in jail with the black politicians who went in jail doing the same thing.
Let me tell you something. And, Donna, I appreciate you as always. And you gave me a vivid, vivid picture with that one. Now, back in May, folks, very quickly, I just want to throw this out there. When this whole thing was started with the pandemic, CBS News did like a tracking of how many applications were submitted by churches. CBS News learned that between 12,000 and 13,000 of the 17,000 Catholic churches in the U.S. applied for the PPP loan. Again, Paycheck Protection Program loans. So 12 and 13,000 of 17,000 Catholic churches applied. And guess what? About 9,000 of those who applied got the loan. Yeah, 9,000. So, and I think, Donna, you're absolutely correct that, you know, in the sense of if you apply for that stuff back in last year and you were like, oh, okay, we got away with it. Now that there's a change in administration, there is more emphasis on accountability and transparency, especially when it comes to these government funds. You don't want to play around with that. You really don't want to play around. Let me go back to the line and hear what folks got to say. 410-319-8888. Mark, what's your take of what happened with this pastor? Was it like poetic justice or what?
Brother Faraji, Ramadan Mubarak, my brother.
Rubber Don Kareem, Mark, how you doing, dear brother?
I'm all right, brother. Well, let me say this. First, pimps in the pulpit, here we go again. So, Brother Faraji, I'm not a big advocate for the church, but to answer your first question, I think, yes, they should be able to get it. I mean, there are some legitimate people who legitimately work for the church. For instance,
no doubt.
Many churches have schools, and when the pandemic hit, when those schools were closed, that would, for me, those teachers, those secretaries, all of those people that work for that school should have some paycheck protection. So, yes, I'm going to say they should get it, you know, but I'm 100% in agreement with Donna. You know, they're so greedy, and we have to stop using the defense, because when they're caught, the biggest defense, maybe somebody on this line right now will call you and say, well, you know, the white churches do it too.
Oh, and Mark, you know somebody thinking that.
You know somebody.
I just said, that's what I'm saying. Catholic churches, applied for this loan last year.
Hey, Faraji, I'm going to hit you with this. I'm going to mix apples and oranges for you. Half a second. The shameful part about this is that this brother could possibly get more time than Derek.
Come on, man.
Yeah, that's the
shameful
part.
Come on, man.
He stole money, not saying he right or wrong. I'm simply saying he stole money, and he could possibly get more time than Derek, whatever his name is. I don't even
Rudolph
name.
Brooks Jr. out of D.C.
No, I'm talking about the police officer, Derek. George
Floyd's
killer.
Derek Chauvin.
Yeah, Derek Chauvin. He could possibly do. You said this guy's looking at a maximum of 20 years for stealing money. But Chauvin could actually do 12 years or less. That's the
been talking about this story. Like I said, I'm going to make sure I'm going to this morning, brother. I can't let it go.
Walaikum salam, Mark. I appreciate you. And thank you so much for making that point, because that's very, very real. Let's go back to the line. Tony, thank you for checking in. What's your take?
Hey, good afternoon, brother Faraji. How you doing?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
Okay, so your question is, how
should we? I know they are. Churches are already eligible because churches are nonprofit organizations. But I'm asking, should faith institutions, not just churches, any faith institution, should it still be found eligible for PPP loans? Do we got Tony? No, we don't have Tony. All right, we lost Tony. Tony, give me a call back. I would love to hear what you got to say, sir. Clarence, what's your take?
Hey, Faraji.
Yes,
sir. The only thing I would disagree with Miss Donna about is the fact that greed is colorblind. The prosecution of illegal activity is
right.
Not. You know, that's totally targeted. But listen, this dude, Faraji, he was just dumb. Come on, man. In 2021, where computers and the instant access by government agencies to any and all financial activity when you're applying for any loans or anything like that is instantaneous. Now, you may have could have gotten away with some nonsense like that back when, you know, it was an office full of people pulling records out of file cabinets, but he was just dumb.
My thing is, though, but check this out, Clarence. Check this out. This is how you get caught up, folks. This is how you get caught up in 101. You apply for something, but you apply for something from the federal government, and guess what? They approve your application. Right?
For the usage thereof and not the car.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I'm gonna share something with you very quickly about this guy, Clarence. So I already mentioned that, you know, he applied for $1.5 million. On his application, he allegedly submitted fraudulent tax forms showing $725,000 in payments on his 1099 and $7.4 million in total unemployment payments to employees from Cars Direct.
He thought Trump was still in office, didn't he?
Well, he did this in May. He did this in May of last year.
Okay, well, Look, a church or faith-based institution that can prove that they have a mortgage to pay, that they have rent to pay, that they actually provide a service with an expense to the community or the people that they're serving, I have no problem with that. I don't want to see Pat Robinson, you know, apply for one. I don't want to see the 700 Club get one because, you know, you know what kind of money they have in the bank. But under those circumstances, yes, they should be eligible for it. But for any of these institutions that does not think that you're not going to be looked at, scrutinized to see whether, when you're talking about that kind of money, that somebody is not going to look to see if you actually were doing what you received the funds for, you know, then, you know, that's just dumb.
Well, you know what, though? Here's the thing about that, Clarence, just to add to it. I mean, I hear you very strong words to describe this man. Here's the thing, though. When I hear stories like this, I really get into a space of like, man, I feel sorry for his congregation, man. I feel sorry for the people that follow him.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I'm saying? And this is not no any shade on any Christian pastor or anything like that. It's just about people. Like, I just feel sorry, man, because, you know, and I think Donna made a great point. She said that you get so caught up in the greed. And
yeah.
that greed, that love for wanting that money, or wanting that material thing can get so deep. Like, you literally, you're not even of yourself. You don't even see reality. You don't even see the wall in front of you that you're about to hit.
Faraji, greed is a demon that can manifest itself and afflict and influence any individual at any given time under the correct circumstances. And only the strongest people in those circumstances who obtain power and get in those positions can look the greed demon in the eye and say, no, I'm not going there. I'm going to be of service. It's you get where I'm coming from?
No, you know what? And I agree with you. I agree with you. It takes a strong person. And I'm saying, you want to know what adds to it, Clarence? You and I know this. If you get away with it once, then your confidence in getting away with it again is so high.
That's the greed demon. It's a whole family.
Right.
Big Uncle Greed, I got one here. You can come on and get something.
I appreciate you, Clarence. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I mean, that greed demon is, I like how he put that, the greed demon. The greed demon is real. The confidence rides so high. And it's so sad because you do this. I mean, it'd be one thing if he said, all right, my name is Rudolph Brooks Jr. I own a car company. But you also got to emphasize the fact that you run a house of worship. You run a house of worship, man. People believe in you. And see, you know how some people say, well, you know, some people say that they call. And I understand that this right here, it's these type of stories. Now, it doesn't always have to be like this, but these type of stories, these type of situations certainly can, you know, make a person think twice about, you know, organized religion, being a part of a church, being a part of some faith institution. And it shouldn't. Let me just tell you something, folks, because I know that that's very easy. That, you know, you hear about a pastor like this and you like, see, that's why I'm not a part of the church. That's why I'm not part of this or I'm not a part of that. And it shouldn't, because you should also not have such high expectations for a human being that may not be fully mature, fully developed, or fully rooted in whatever they say they believe in. So that's also on us. That's also on us. Not to say that this pastor didn't do wrong. He was wrong as two left shoes, folks. But you should not allow that to deter you from finding a place that you can cultivate your spirituality. You shouldn't be like, as a result of this, I ain't gonna. You don't. Just keep in mind that your pastor, your minister, is a human being. He or she is going to undergo some real serious trials. They are being tried just as much as you are, and you and I are being tried. So we can't get into a space of being so like expecting that they don't live in the same world that we do, that they're not afflicted with the same emotions that we're afflicted with, that they don't have a distorted view about some things as much as we have distorted view about things. They are in the path of becoming better, just like you and I are in the path of becoming better. So don't let a person deter you away from you building your relationship with the Almighty. That's all I'm gonna say. That's all I'm going to say. Folks, I appreciate y'all. Thank y'all so much for checking in. Thank y'all for checking in on my Facebook page. Thank you for checking in on air. I want to thank my fantastic guest that we had tonight. We had Miss Linda Chenier from Baltimore City Public School Board Chair, Miss Johnette Richardson, the Vice Chair of the Baltimore City Public School Board, and, of course, my very special guest, Miss Tanisa Welch, First Lady of the Black Mafia family. Folks, man, tomorrow's Friday. So, you know, anything can be said, anything can happen, anybody can show up. Just make sure y'all tune in. Just make sure you tune in, because tomorrow is Friday, and we're going to have some fun. It's the end of the week. It's been a long week. It's been a lot of things happening, but tomorrow's Friday. So just thank the God that you're able to see the end of the week. Folks, that's going to do it for me. Up next is Lolo with In the Groove, some of that great music to chill you out for your Thursday evening, so stick around for that. And as always, I want to thank my dynamic team. I want to thank my man, Daryl. Daryl, that's what I'm just going to call him, Daryl. And congratulations, Daryl, on graduating. Yes, you are great. Can you give yourself a warm round of applause? He's graduating. There we go. There we go. Daryl trying to figure out how to be happy for himself. What button do I push? Yes, Daryl, congratulations. Got my man Daryl checking in. Daryl been with us for like 3 years. He's probably the longest intern ever. Daryl, congratulations. Big shout out to my man Dre Day and, of course, my producer Demi Goff. Folks, stay tuned. Up next is Lolo. As always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. God willing, we'll talk tomorrow for another exciting edition of For the Culture right here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. And remember, Baltimore, do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Rick Ross, let's go.
I'm self-made, you a sucker, I'm self-paid, this for my broke, this for my...